ting drinking is very bad. Yo, I got a fake ID though. Yeah.
Hello, this is What the Faux, a travel podcast, and this is another mini episode for you. This one is about drinking all around the world.
This is a big part of traveling. I'm glad we're going to talk about it, and who better to join us than Chris Lukey from the Pubcast Worldwide Podcast.
So this one is all about getting tipsy in the club, just like the song. Do you know what my favourite part of this song is when they go...
I like the first bit where it says, teen drinking is very bad.
Right, so yes, we are talking to Chris Lukey, like you said, and we asked him what his tipple is. And if you don't know what a tipple is, that's what we say in England as, what's your favourite drink?
Ah, okay, so I'm learning something today too. So my favourite tipple, is that how you say it?
That's it.
Boy, right now, my favorite drink changes depending on the mood. But first and foremost, I'm a beer guy. I'm from the middle of the country in the U.S. where there's a lot of German influence, so in turn, a lot of beer culture. Right now, I'm a big fan of the hazy, juicy IPAs that are coming out of New England in the northeastern United States. And consequently, if I'm going to get specific, if I were drinking a beer right now, I've got a Hen House IPA sitting in my fridge, which is actually more of a West Coast IPA from a brewery just north of San Francisco, where I currently live. But I'm certainly not just limited to beer. I'm a cocktail guy too. I love a good White Russian with Kahlua and vodka. That's my go-to wedding reception drink. And being this close to Napa Valley, I won't shy away from wine either. So probably more than you wanted to know about my drinking habits, but depends on the mood.
Yeah, that's great.
That's really good to know. Your tipple or your drink, do you think that says a lot about someone? So for example, I'm obviously a woman, but I drink a lot of whiskey. And over here in the UK, that's considered as quite a manly drink. Do you think that, you know, a drink says a lot about someone?
Yeah, I think it can. I think with how big drinking culture and craft drinking culture has gotten, it's becoming a little more ambiguous since a lot of people have varying tastes. But I do think you can tell something from what someone's preferred drink of choice would be. You know, for example, being a beer guy, you might make an assumption about, you know, where I'm from, what my partying style is. If someone likes a lot of vodka or whiskey, you know, you might think it's like, man, this guy can really, really put him away for a long time at a party. So I think there are some conclusions you can draw, but it is becoming more difficult, especially as, you know, regions of the world get more into craft beer that were traditionally into wine. And it's an evolving scene. So it's becoming a bit more tricky than it used to be.
Yeah. So what do you think it is about drinking that brings people together, and in particular when you're traveling?
Ooh, boy, that is a good question. And I was reflecting on this a little bit before the interview, but really, while I could probably point out some cultures that, you know, have party harder than others or have had a bit more of a wild drinking culture, I think the reality is, and one thing that I've found from doing a global beer and drinking podcast, is that drinking is one of those things that just brings anyone together in any culture. Now, the customs differ from spot to spot, but I think especially when traveling, you know, I'll highlight the backpacker example first. When you've got people coming in from Australia, the U.S., from Canada, from various parts of Europe, it's a very quick way. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's a social lubricant to get the conversation going. So I think that's one of the biggest aspects about it. Wherever you go, that is something that almost every culture shares in common, is that not necessarily limited to drinking, but they all have their own way of celebrating. And it's fun to bring together those different elements from different parts of the world.
Well, yeah, I completely agree. A great example of that, we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but we did a pub crawl in Copenhagen. There were people from all around the world, and people who probably, like, our political leaders probably wouldn't get along, but we're on this pub crawl, people all around the world, and we were just having the best time together, and it was all thanks to drink.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think in most spots in Europe, and I think most hostels around the world do facilitate those type of bar crawls, and you get that instant camaraderie from that, regardless of where you're from.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess obviously drink is so different to food, and food is such a sociable thing as well. Like, you can sit around a table and talk to people for, well, I could talk to people for hours about different foods. But I was just wondering, like, what is it about drink? I guess it is just because, like, you lose your inhibitions when you're drinking, and you're not so embarrassed to say certain things if you're a little bit tipsy. So I guess it's sociable in that way, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think one thing that is a little bit more unique about drinking than food, well, actually, they have this in common, but people drink differently in different parts of the world. Like, there are certain cultures that when you're having a meal, it's very much a toasting culture, like a shot of vodka or a shot of soju in South Korea. So it does vary from spot to spot, and I think it's a way to kind of highlight how different groups of people may socialize, but it's also a good way just to have a common bond amongst folks from different cultures.
Yeah, definitely. So for you personally, where's the best place for drinking culture that you've found?
Ooh boy. So I'll highlight a few spots for you that stick out and the reasons why.
Yeah.
So one, I was just having a conversation with a friend yesterday who lives in Berlin, Germany, and it's one of my personal favorite spots to travel to as well. And he described it as an onion. He's lived there for over 6 months now, and he's continuing to peel back layers. And I think that's very true for the drinking and club scene there as well. For those not as familiar with drinking and party culture in Berlin, it's one of those stay up all night type spots. And then in addition to that, just based on the city's dynamic infrastructure, there are a lot of very unique bars and breweries and restaurants that are hidden in old subway shops, or like I should say subway stations and things like that. And I remember when I was there, I ended up going to this like three-layer club that was in this old bombed out subway shelter, and it had like a rock venue, it had a cocktail bar, and I was trying to find the name of it before this interview. But regardless of the name, what I did find is that Berlin has tons of these type of bars. So it not only is it a very strong party culture, but it's a very unique type of bar setup in that city, I should say. So Berlin is one of the first ones that comes to mind. Since I am primarily a beer guy, another country that stuck out to me was Chile in South America, because that was the first country where I was traveling probably 4 years ago, where I was really surprised by how big the craft beer scene there was. And that's when I started to realize that craft beer was evolving throughout the world. And I saw that recently on my trip to Croatia. And I was just in the UK. I saw that very well firsthand in London. But I would say Chile is one of the spots that most surprised me from having a strong craft beer scene. And then lastly, I got to hand it to somewhere at home as well. There's a city in the northern Midwest called Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which that city knows how to put their drinks away. It's cold in the winter. The winters are long. So if there's a city that knows how to contain their beer, it's Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah, because I've actually spent some time in the US. It was about 10 years ago now. But yeah, everywhere I went, there's Milwaukee beer, isn't there, in all the stores and supermarkets. So yeah, Milwaukee, when you say that, I instantly think of beer. But I mean, best places for us, you've said it, Berlin. I mean, we actually spent last New Year's Eve in Berlin. So we know it's a crazy, crazy place.
Definitely a crazy place. Actually, we weren't at the party, but there's a famous club. I can't remember what it's
called.
The
Bergheim?
Yeah, the Bergheim. And the New Year's Day party, or New Year's Eve party, went on for 3 or 4 days. It didn't stop.
We heard on the 3rd of January, the New Year's party had finished, which is just crazy.
Amazing.
For us as well. Yeah, Berlin. Yeah, Germany as a whole, I'm with you there. I really like Germany. Czech Republic and Prague is very famous for beer. The beer is cheaper than water in restaurants and bars. And a lot of the bars, you know, they make it all themselves. So it's very fresh. Budapest as well has got great nightlife. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bars called the Ruin Bars, and I believe they're buildings which were kind of in disrepair after World War II, and they thought, what should we do with them? And they left them as they were, and they turned them into bars, which makes for a really cool atmosphere. Me and myself, I've been to Vegas, but I was 18 at the time, so I couldn't really do anything.
Vegas is a good one. Vegas is one of the crazy spots in the US for sure.
Yeah, well, it's one of those places, one of them party spots around the world. I did get to have a good time. A group of us, we rented a limo, and we had some drinks in the limo. That was cool, but I couldn't really do Vegas.
So, well, Nick's been to Vegas, but I haven't. So I kind of a question to both of you, really. From a person that's never been, I kind of see it as one of those places that I could very easily go to Vegas, but get lost and not have a good night. So it'll be so famous and you know, my head's bigged up to how good it will be. But then, sure, I just think it would be a place that would be quite hard to find the good places.
Yeah, it's Vegas is unique because I think part of the charm in Vegas is that it's so manufactured and it's kind of built up with the lights and whatnot. Like you have Caesar's Palace, you have hotels that are themed after Paris and New York City. So it's kind of this melting pot of some of the most unique aspects about a lot of places, but also some very cheesy aspects about it as well. But that's kind of the charm to Vegas, is that there's truly nowhere else in the world like it. So you kind of have to accept that uniqueness, or that kitsch, as we say here in the U.S., that makes Vegas seem a little inauthentic, but that's where a lot of its character comes in. I will contrast that a little bit with one of my other favorite drinking cities in the U.S., which is New Orleans, which parties just as hard, very unique culture. And quite frankly, if you want a city that's always having a festival, always has something going on and always feels alive, New Orleans would if someone said, Chris, do you want to go to Vegas or do you want to go to New Orleans? I would say New Orleans any day of the week.
And I'm actually so glad you said that, because I would have forgot. Yes, I have been to New Orleans as well. And again, I was 18, but I was still able to have a very good time. I don't know whether things are, I mean, that was 10 years ago. I'm not sure whether things have changed, but I remember they were a lot more relaxed when it came to ID, like it being 21. But yeah, New Orleans is great. And I think it was actually on your podcast I heard it's better to go to New Orleans on Halloween than it is Mardi Gras. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually a big, because I used to live in Houston, Texas, which is a short drive away from New Orleans. And Mardi Gras is great. It's something everyone should experience. But it's, you know, that's not the time to go to Bourbon Street, which is the most famous street, because it's just wall to wall people. It's packed. But New Orleans does a lot of very great music festivals as well. And they do them on Halloween weekend. They do them in the springtime as well. And not only is the weather perfect that time of year, because it's not, you know, not too hot, not too cold, but the reality is New Orleans has some of the best music you'll find in the world. So this takes us a step beyond just the drinking, but with all the local acts that are there, if you can get to New Orleans when there's some sort of music festival going on, you will see some of the most world-class brass jazz music you'll find anywhere on the planet.
So is that what Mardi Gras is? Because I know Nick knows quite a bit about it, but I didn't really know of Mardi Gras until I did some research for this interview, actually. So for some of us that don't know, can you explain a little bit about Mardi Gras?
Yeah, so funny enough, Mardi Gras is actually the kickoff to the religious time of year called Lent in Catholicism and Christianity. And what Mardi Gras started as was, there's a day called Fat Tuesday, which is right before Lent starts. And it's kind of your last day of revelry and celebration before you have to give something up, before you start fasting. So that's where Mardi Gras evolved from. And over time, New Orleans has kind of become the hub for the Mardi Gras celebration, where it's no longer just a one-day celebration. It's kind of a week-long celebration as well, where you have a lot of masquerades, a lot of masks. People spend months getting their costumes and their floats together for these parades in Mardi Gras. And it's a big to-do. You have people traveling in from around the country, from around the world. So what started as a one-day celebration has now turned into a week-long festival that's really become a characteristic of the city of New Orleans.
Very nice. We have this book. I'll show it to you on the camera, but it's called 101 Places to Get Fucked Up Before You Die, okay? So that's the book.
Nice. I might need to snag a copy of that at some point.
So it's kind of like a Bible for drinking people, I guess. The book's in different sections. So, you know, you have spendy locations, so places that are expensive, blowouts, which are all the festivals around the world, which Mardi Gras is in there as well. But I was just wondering if you could see if you can guess one of the 15 places on the bar crawl list. So which place do you reckon would be the best place for a bar crawl?
And so we're talking cities here. Rather than countries, we're talking cities.
Yeah, let's see if you can get one of the 15.
One of the 15. Well, I would be very surprised. I'm going to go pretty basic at first. I'd be surprised if somewhere like London was not on that list.
London is not on the list.
It's not actually, no.
No.
But really?
I'm with you. I thought it would be.
Well, rather than throw darts at that, I mean, one spot, having just come back from here and experiencing how good of a bar crawl town it was, I'd say Prague would be on that list.
Oh, I would agree with you, but it's not on the list. This must be a really crap book.
We're not sure how factually accurate this book really is. It's just someone's opinion. But you're not.
Let me ask this. I'm going to take one more shot to see if I'm getting any of these right. But are some of these locations in the U.S.?
Let's have a look. Yes.
There's definitely one.
Two. Oh, three
of them are in the U.S.
Oh, boy. Give me many shots for the U.S. But, I can personally say that Austin, Texas is
another great bar town.
Yes. All right.
There you go. That was actually the top one on there. I don't know whether that means it is the top one. So on the list, we've got Austin, Texas, Belfast, Madrid, Brooklyn, New York, Brussels in Belgium, Cape Town, South Africa, Chicago, Illinois, Dusseldorf, Glasgow, Halifax, which is in Canada, Long Island in New York, Lisbon, Los Angeles, Berlin, and Savannah in Georgia.
So there you go.
There's some good ones. I mean, Savannah is definitely a spot that not everyone knows about, that is definitely a great drinking town. I'd be interested to see why L.A. made that list, because when I think bar crawl, I think walking from spot to spot. And L.A. is a little spread out, so I might question that one a little bit. Yeah, but I feel good since I got the number one spot, because Austin is a wild city that I'd highly recommend everyone check out for a little bit of Texas flair and just back-to-back bars for blocks and blocks.
Great. Okay, but yeah, you done well getting the top one. Well done. Okay, so in like your travels or maybe people you've met at home in the US, what nationalities do you think are the best drinkers? Who can drink anyone under the table?
Yeah, I love that question. I've asked my guests that question on my show a number of times. I've got two answers, but they're similar. And one of them is from my own experience, and one of them is from the countless stories I've heard. And consequently, both of these are pretty cold weather countries. And I've talked about Milwaukee earlier. I think there's an element of being able to hold your alcohol and drink a lot, and especially when you're in a country where you kind of want to keep warm. And I think alcohol is a great way to at least trick yourself into thinking that. So I'm going to hand it to my brothers and sisters north of the U.S. and Canada. I think they do a good job of being able to hold their alcohol and also have a great time all night long, regardless of how much they've had. So that's my local answer. And then we talked about toasting culture around the world. A spot like that would be Russia, where if you're having a dinner in Russia, chances are you're doing about 5 to 10 vodka toasts throughout that meal. So if you're not experienced, you might be hurting a little at the end of it, or you might even be asleep by the end of it. But I would say most of the folks that have been around the block in Russia a few times are probably holding their own even after 10 shots throughout a meal.
And as well as these shots, I guess, are they also drinking beer and wine?
Ooh, that's a good question. I've never experienced one of these firsthand, but I would assume there's like a bonus drink right next to them, to say the least.
Yeah, so a lot of people around here say that the Irish are really big drinkers, and they definitely are. I'm sure like your average Irish person can drink people under the table. But from my experience from traveling the world and going to different festivals, the people I would say is the Dutch. They can, they're always big parties. They're always the last people like on the dance floor or still partying at 6 a.m. in the morning. So from my perspective, they're the best drinkers.
Yeah, those guys know how to party. I need to give a quick mention to the Czechs, because this is true that I think per capita in the Czech Republic, they drink the most beer out of anyone in the world. So that's not including wine and spirits, but beer, they're the biggest beer drinkers. You'd think it might be the Germans, but yeah, the Czechs are the biggest beer drinkers. But I'm going to have to give it to Moldova, because we actually met a guy from Moldova and he was on our Copenhagen pub crawl that I mentioned earlier. And plus, and he could drink a lot and he knew how to party. But plus in this book that we've got, which I know we're questioning how accurate it might be, in this book they're saying apparently you'll never outdrink a Moldovan.
I did not know that. I would have never guessed that coming into this, because I think the shout outs you gave to the Dutch, yes, I have partied with the Dutch before, and I have never tracked how much they're drinking throughout the night, but I can always say they're usually the last one standing out of the group.
Okay.
Do you have any personal iconic drinking stories?
Ooh, okay. I'm going to start off with kind of a little bit of a traditional answer to this. I won't give you all the details, but everyone's got a good drinking story. And I think one reason I'm usually not the butt of the joke in a drinking story is because I'm usually the party planner. So that comes with the responsibility of kind of corralling everyone, making sure everyone's doing okay. I will say the first time I drank a beverage called Four Loko, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it is basically the equivalent of like six cans of malt liquor and four cups of coffee combined into this 20 or 24 ounce can.
That sounds insane.
It is insane. If you can imagine before you go out on a night, it's like, you know what? I think I'm going to have six beers and four cups of coffee. No one would ever say that, but this drink is basically the concentrated equivalent of that. It has since been banned, or the recipe has been changed for obvious reasons, but I was in Miami Beach with a bunch of my friends, and we all had it for the first time, and we were straight up maniacs after having this beverage. Someone tried to attack a seagull, someone lost their wallet and their keys and someone else's sunglasses in the ocean. They probably lost their dignity in the process as well too. But we all ended up on different sides of town later that night. And this is a 3-day trip, mind you. And, you know, to throw myself under the bus a little bit, I never slept in my hotel room during that trip. The first night I woke up on the beach, the second night I woke up by a swimming pool, and the last night I woke up in the hotel lobby right before I was, you know, my bus was leaving. So that was the closest I ever made it to my bed. But needless to say, it was a wild time with too many people to track and too many stories to really keep in touch with. But the reality is, Four Loko was the cause of that insanity. So I have since retired. That was basically the first and last time I ever had that beverage.
Nice.
So that's kind of my traditional drinking story. What I'd kind of like to highlight, though, is what I experienced during my last time in Europe is just how much drinking and beer specifically can bring people together. Because when I traveled to the UK, I packed a bunch of California beer in my backpack to trade with the locals in the beer scene. And I spent my 2.5 days in London at the bottle shops and the breweries trading beers with them. And the look on someone's face when you're bringing a rare beer from halfway across the world to trade for some rare beer from there is incredible. And the conversations and the stories would last for hours after doing that each time. And I thought I was kind of be a one-for-one trade because I brought, you know, 4 to 6 beers over. And I ended up with like 15 beers in return. And then I had to fly to Croatia. So had to check the bag. I had some extra beer. And as cool as it was in the UK trading beer, when I got to Croatia and was traveling around some of the small villages and had some beer from London to trade with them for their beers, I mean, the reaction was uncanny because you can imagine that in the UK, it might be a little more accessible to get beer from the United States. But at a small village in Croatia where their craft beer scene is just evolving, it's quite that much more difficult. And just the enthusiasm around the individuals that I was meeting with, because I was trying their beer and they were really excited to hear what I thought about it as well. And there's this connection between the creativity and the social element that goes into beer that from trading beers around Europe, I really had a new appreciation for how much beverages and beer specifically can bring people together.
Nice. I like it. Good story. So I suppose I do want to mention, you reminded me about falling asleep in strange places. Of course, we've all done that. Only a few months ago when I was on a stag party, like a bachelor party in a place called Norwich in the UK, I managed to sleep most of the night in the hotel hallway. So I made it close to my room, but I was asleep in the hallway. But I think this is about 8 or 9 years ago. I went to Oktoberfest in Germany, of course, like the biggest beer festival in the world. I didn't realize the beer over there is maybe 1 or 2% stronger than what we're used to in the UK. And so after a couple of steins, which, you know, they're a liter of beer, I didn't really know what had happened, to be honest. And the only time in my life this has ever happened where I'm drinking, having a great time with my friends, and then you can almost like click your fingers, wake up the next day feeling really bad. Oh my God, what's happened?
Yeah.
I'd lost my phone, and then like I've got like Amy, who's now my wife, my girlfriend at the time, thinking she must be worrying sick. I haven't spoke to her all night, and Then I eventually found my phone. It was been handed in at a campsite I was staying at, thank God. I've got all these missed calls and text messages, you know, from my now wife. She's worried, sick, what's going on?
I'm thinking, not worried, angry.
Well, angry.
Yeah, yeah, good clarification.
And I just thought, what an idiot. But, you know, I never planned for that. I was caught out by, you know, how much the beer was stronger than what I was used to. But, you know, it's all down to experience. I'll never get in that situation again. And that's how we learn.
Absolutely. And I've got two very short stories. I kind of have a problem with drink when it comes to celebration. So I'll either not really drink or I will drink a lot. I'm one of those people. So two of them actually involve us being married. So the first time was it was my birthday. So a big celebration. Went out in London in Shoreditch and got very, very drunk with Nick and my best friends. We were meant to go home that night, but then I woke up at 6 a.m. My mind had completely gone. I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
And I found I'd lost my engagement ring. It wasn't on my finger and I was so scared. And it was 6 a.m. I started screaming in my friend's house. I was like, where's my ring? Where's my ring? And then it just so happened that my friend had taken it off and put it on the side. But I didn't even recognize where I was. I was so drunk. And the second was actually our wedding night because
okay,
another big celebration, but we had a free bar at our wedding because we wanted everyone to have a good time. So we brought in loads and loads of drink, and because of being so nervous, I didn't really eat that much that day, and I drank so much. Apparently, my friends have told me they saw me drinking straight from the bottle, and it was like whiskey. And yeah, I did the same thing. So I woke up the next day, and I only kind of missed the last hour, to be honest, where most people had gone home. But I couldn't remember the last hour, which was pretty scary.
But she was having a good time. It wasn't like an antisocial drunk.
Yeah.
It was fine. You're having a good time. And then
at
the end of the night, I put you to bed. And then I went back to start like clearing up some of the wedding while you were fast asleep. But I
thought you were going to say you went back to party for a few more hours after that, because that would have been a super clutch move.
Yeah, he should have.
It was over by then. Most people had gone home. But hey, both stories. Yeah, you might look back and think, oh, what was I thinking? But it's experience, and it was fun. So who cares?
So what you're saying is every time we get drunk, it's just a learning opportunity is really all it is.
Exactly. I'm with you.
I'm going to pitch it that way to all my friends from now on.
That's right. Okay. So when you're in a new country, how would you recommend that someone finds the good drinking spots, like pub crawls? Do you do research on the internet? Yeah. Well, what are your tips of finding those good spots?
You know, it's evolved for me over the years. Like the first time I went to Europe 7 years ago, I was, you know, I'd look in some of the more off the beaten track guidebooks. I'd ask the hostels while I was there. But I mean, to be honest, that was, I guess, 2010. And, you know, the smartphone revolution really hadn't taken hold yet. So now you can kind of just access that data and that information on demand to figure out where to go. But what I think is probably the best way to do it now, and this is what I did on my most recent jaunt over to Europe, is talk to your network, like, because chances are you know someone that knows someone from Prague, or you know someone that knows someone from London, or, you know, on your side of things, you probably know a few people that know people from spots in different parts of the States. And you can really get that insider information through a connection that way, which in this case, I'll give you an example. My buddy here in San Francisco, Jason, runs a food and beverage website and network, and he had a couple connections in Prague and London, and he hooked me up with them. And not only were they able to tell me where to go, they were also able to meet up with me for a drink as
nice.
Well. And that gave me someone to socialize with when I was overseas, because as good as the hostel bar crawls and things like that are, they're not necessarily going to take you to the spots that not everyone knows about. So I think the best way to find a spot when you go to a different country is to tap into your network and your friends and your acquaintances to see if someone can guide you to some of the spots that really the locals only know about.
Good information. That's good advice. So last question, where would you say is the worst place to drink? Because I know where mine is, but I'll tell you after your answer.
Wow, the worst place.
Or maybe the most disappointing.
Most disappointing. You know, I think I've highlighted it before. Every country has their own unique drinking cultures. I think a spot that I felt was a little overrated the first time I went to was Barcelona. because I had been in Europe for 2 to 3 weeks and people were just raving about Barcelona. And rightfully so. It is a good party town. People stay up really late. But one thing I think I felt on that trip was it's not necessarily that they party harder. It's just their clock is a little different. Like where in the U.S. you might start drinking at 8 o'clock and go out till 2 a.m. There you really start drinking at midnight and you're out till 6 a.m. So it wasn't so much an element of partying any harder than somewhere else. I will say they do party differently. There's a lot more dancing. There's, I think, in Spain and a lot of Latin American countries, there's a natural element of camaraderie and celebration, which I think are wonderful things. But I think where anyone can run into a challenge with being disappointed where they go to is when the expectations are set so high that it's going to be very difficult to meet those when you get there.
Yeah, definitely. And that's exactly why we didn't enjoy the place that I was going to say for my answer. It's Reykjavik in Iceland. So
Yes.
So last year, I don't know whether you saw from the US that last year Iceland had a massive boom and everyone was visiting there, mm-hmm. especially from the UK. We know a lot of people that travelled there. And we've done an episode on Iceland, so a lot of our listeners know exactly how I feel. To say it was a disappointment is a bit of an understatement.
We did a pub crawl, didn't we?
Yeah, so at this pub crawl, like we went to 3 or 4 main bars, and you know, a pub crawl can be quite awkward at the start because not everybody's had too many drinks yet and you don't know everyone and you just start talking, which is fine. I get that. That happens a lot. But that it kind of stayed like that throughout the whole night and nobody really gelled and it was just a bit awkward. And the clubs, I don't know. I don't really know what it was about it, but it was just quite boring.
Well, yeah, it's a small place and that we've said it a million times. Mm-hmm. We aren't going into too much depth about it, but that's part of the charm of Iceland. It's a small place. Not many people live there.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, For us, it was a bit boring and expensive. That's one of the key things for a night out. If you're yeah. drinking, very expensive.
Yeah, right now the flights from the US to Iceland are still super cheap. So that's why there's been a big influx of people going there. So, and I didn't necessarily know the prices were a little more expensive. I suppose that doesn't surprise me since it is a pretty isolated spot. But yeah, I could see Iceland being one of the spots that's a little disappointing these days just based on all the hype and the amount of people that are going there right now.
Yeah. And just finally, can you tell us about Pubcast Worldwide and where we can all find it?
Yeah, absolutely. So Pubcast Worldwide is my podcast that I do where I interview interesting people around the world, typically entrepreneurs, people involved in the food scene, or other notable individuals over drinks at bars. So as much as I love a good Skype interview, none of my interviews are over Skype connections. They all have to be in the bar, in the pub, in the brewery. So that way you've got that social element. And we always kick off with a toast. We talk about the drinking culture. We talk about that individual's story. And we really kind of paint a picture of what it's like to drink in San Francisco, California, or in London in the United Kingdom. And to find it, the best spot is pubcastworldwide.com. That's where you can subscribe to it on every podcasting platform from Google Play to iTunes, where most people go. And then if I had to give one social media link, I'd say keep up with it on Instagram, because that's where I post all the beautiful pictures of beers in front of monuments around the world, including most recently some in front of Big Bend, some in the Adriatic in the off the coast of Croatia. And I think I need to start getting some pictures up of beers in front of the Golden Gate Bridge here at home in San Francisco sometime soon.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, it's been really nice to talk to you. And I feel like we need to go out drinking now.
Oh, well, yeah, I was just going to say, yeah. I'm going to go get a drink now. I don't know about you guys. I know it's early where you are, but it's evening here. So let's go. Right.
Well, I will raise a glass to you guys later on tonight once I crack open my beer.
Chris, my man, thank you for joining us. What a guy. Really, really enjoyed that chat.
Yes, thank you very much, Chris. And we also asked you guys where you think the best place to go drinking around the world. And we asked you on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. So we're just going to go through, give you a few shout outs and say where you think is the good place. So, Nick, do you want to start?
Yeah, first of all, Ashley, she said Pub Street in Cambodia. I think that's a good shout. We had a good night out in Siem Reap in Cambodia, didn't we?
We did, yeah. It was that classic like Asian night where you have all the buckets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I remember that night, I really embarrassed myself because it was the first time I'd smoked shisha.
And you just gave me a funny look there.
What are you about to say? First time I smoked crack cocaine. That never happened.
But it's the first place I smoked shisha, and we was with this girl, and she was like trying to teach me what to do, and I was like, babe, I got it. I know what I'm doing. And then I blew into the pipe instead of sucking on it.
You always blow when you're supposed to suck, Amy.
Right, going back to Instagram, we had Ankita, who we know from our faux party. She said Colombia rum.
Good shout. Ryan Sanim, he said Guatemala.
Nice. Not somewhere that would immediately jump to mind, but we haven't been there. We're going there next year, but you never know. Jazz Brewing said Irado. I think that's how you say it. I did look this up, and I think it's in somewhere like Holland, the Netherlands.
Okay.
Around that area.
But yeah, the Dutch do know how to party, you said earlier, Amy.
Exactly.
Ed Patrick, he also got in touch. He said, well, he said Pompey. Does he mean Pompey as in Portsmouth in England or Pompeii? I don't know, but Pompey?
Let's be honest about this. We had an argument about this, didn't we?
Well, because you were adamant it was Pompeii. And I said, look, Amy, it's spelt Pompey, like P-O-M-P-E-Y.
But at the time, I wasn't looking at it. I was convinced that earlier I'd seen it as Pompeii. And I was like, Nick, for fuck's sake, you always get stuff wrong.
Yeah, you're like, it's obviously not Pompeii. What the fuck are you talking about?
All about honesty on this show. Right, Kendall Husband Photography on Instagram said Sakura Bar in Vang Vieng in Laos.
And Kimberly Lorimer. Kimberly, I'm from Australia. I'm from Scotland. I don't know where I'm from. I don't know where I'm going. She got in touch and also said Colombia rum. But she also mentioned Laos as well. She said Beer Laos is the one.
I thought she'd go for Colombia because it's like her favourite country.
Yeah.
Wandering Lucy said wine tasting in the Western Cape, South Africa.
Much more high class. I like your style.
Definitely more high class than the answers we were expecting.
Geordie Sanchez also got in touch. He said Seoul in South Korea. Not the traditional crappy soju, but he said grab beers and other drinks at any time at a convenience store and drink anywhere. He said that's hard to beat, right?
I guess so, because there's so many countries where it's illegal to like drink on the street, isn't it? So that's a good shout. Don't You Work, who is James from our Colombia episode, has said everywhere, everywhere is good to drink. He said, but if I had to pick a special turning point in my life, it would probably be Utila in Honduras, because it was a time when I became a qualified drinking instructor.
He told us that story, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, long story short, he met a load of diving instructors and they were teaching him how to do that and he was quite scared. And I don't think these group of people were like big drinkers, so he then taught them how to be big drinkers.
Yeah, he would know. He's the expert.
He is.
Flashbacking Duo also got in touch. They said Philippines. They said the rum is as cheap as a bottle of water. That's pretty good.
Amazing. And Pocket Trailblazer, who is Charlie Keep from our America episode, said Tortola, I think that's how you say it, or Tortilla, in the British Virgin Islands. The rum is epic. Or Italian Alps for a Bombardino. Whatever that is.
Yeah, Bombardino, what's that? We're getting a lot of rum, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't actually know that many rum drinkers, but there we go.
And Patrick Hart also got in touch. He said the Annex in Portland, Oregon. He said it's an underground hole in the wall that was a speakeasy back in the Prohibition era. Really neat vibe. Not a great place for a big group as it can't hold more than 30 people comfortably. But everyone should go and have a couple of brews there.
Sounds good. That's where my brother lives. So hopefully one time we get to check that out and we can meet Patrick there and have a great night in the Annex.
Patrick, let's do it. Me, you, Amy, yeah, in the Annex.
Paddy from the Budgeteers got in touch as well and he just said anywhere.
Cheers, Paddy.
Great answer.
And an organisation called the High Friendship League, they also got in touch and they said 40 Thieves, Diani Beach, Kenya. Diani Beach, but anyway, Kenya. So that's our first, oh no, it's not our first Africa. We had South Africa as well.
I thought 40 Thieves was like not a real place and it was like something off of Aladdin.
Yeah, is he having us on? 40 Thieves.
We'll have to look that one up later. And lastly, Kira Louise Curtis got in touch on Facebook and she said, Mexico, Fifth Avenue in Playa del Carmen has tons of bars. And then there are loads of little streets off the main street with loads of local bars and beach bars, as well as a clubbing street with Coco Bongos.
Great. I mean, good suggestions from everyone. Like, we've heard of some really cool places, stuff that we wouldn't have expected to hear. I think for me, I guess Paddy and James are kind of right, where most places you can drink. For me, I'd just say avoid, if you want to go drinking, avoid like the Middle East, maybe India. They're not great places to go drinking. Some countries in the Middle East, it's illegal to drink. I think apart from that, you're good wherever you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So safe drinking, safe travels, and we will see you on our next mini episode.
please feel free to get in touch with the show. You can do that by checking out our website, www.whatthefotravelpodcast.com. From that, you can find all of our social media channels. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our email address is whatthefotpodcast@gmail.com.